The Witchcraft of Ulua. Clark Ashton Smith. Sabmon the Anchorite was famed no less for his piety than for his prophetic vision and knowledge of the dark art of sorcery. He had dwelt alone for 2 generations in a curious house on the rim of the northern desert of Tassoon, a house whose floor and walls were built from the large bones of dromedaries, and whose roof was a wattling composed of the smaller bones of wild dogs and men and hyenas. These ossuary relics, chosen for their whiteness and symmetry, were bound securely together with well-tanned thongs, and were joined and fitted with marvelous closeness, leaving no space for the blown sand to penetrate. This house was the pride of Sabmon, who swept it daily with a besom of mummy's hair, till it shone immaculate as polished ivory, both within and without. Despite his remoteness and reclusion, and the hardships that attended a journey to his abode, Sabmon was much consulted by the people of Tassoon, and was even sought by pilgrims from the farther shores of Zothik. However, though not ungracious or inhospitable, he often ignored the queries of his visitors, who, as a rule, wished merely to divine the future, or to ask advice concerning the most advantageous government of their affairs. He became more and more taciturn with age, and spoke little with men in his last years. It was said, perhaps not untruly, that he preferred to talk with the murmuring palms about his well, or the wandering stars that went over his hermitage. In the summer of Sabmon's 93rd year, there came to him the youth Amalzane, his great-nephew, and the son of a niece that Sabmon had loved dearly in days before his retirement to a gymnosophic seclusion. Amalzane, who had spent his 21 years in the upland home of his parents, was on his way to Mirab, the capital of Tassoon, where he would serve as a cupbearer to Famulgath, the king. This post, obtained for him by influential friends of his father, was much coveted among the youth of the land, and would lead to high advancement if he were fortunate enough to win the king's favor. In accord with his mother's wish, he had come to visit Sabmon and to ask the counsel of the sage regarding various problems of worldly conduct. Sabmon, whose eyes were undimmed by age and astronomy and much poring over volumes of archaic ciphers, was pleased with Amalzane, and found in the boy something of his mother's beauty, and for this reason he gave freely of his hoarded wisdom. And after uttering many profound and pertinent maxims, he said to Amalzane, "It is indeed well that you have come to me, for, innocent of the world's turpitude, you fare to a city of strange sins, and strange witcheries, and sorceries. There are numerous evils in Mirab. Its women are witches and harlots, and their beauty is a foulness wherein the young, the strong, the valiant, are limed and taken." Then, ere Amalzane departed, Sabmon gave to him a small amulet of silver, graven curiously with the Migniard skeleton of a girl, and Sabmon said, "I counsel you to wear this amulet at all times henceforth. It contains a pinch of ashes from the pyre of Yas Ebni, sage and archimage, who won supremacy over men and demons in elder years by defying all mortal temptation and putting down the insubordination of the flesh. There is a virtue in these ashes, and they will protect you from such evils as were overcome by Yas Ebni. And yet, peradventure, there are ills and enchantments in Mirab from which the amulet cannot defend you. In such case, you must return to me. I shall watch over you carefully, and shall know all that occurs to you in Mirab, for I have long since become the owner of certain rare faculties of sight and hearing, whose exercise is not debarred or limited by mere distance." Amalzane, being ignorant of the matters at which Sabmon hinted, was somewhat bewildered by this peroration, but he received the amulet gratefully. Then, bidding Sabmon a reverential farewell, he resumed his journey to Mirup, wondering much as to the fortune that would befall him in that sinful and many-legend city. Famorga, who had grown old and senile amid his debaucheries, was the ruler of an aging, semi-desert land, and his court was a place of far-sought luxury, of ubiquitous refinement and corruption. The youth, Amalzane, accustomed only to the simple manners, the rude virtues and vices of country-dwelling folk, was dazzled at first by the sybaritic life around him. But a certain innate strength of character, fortified by the moral teachings of his parents and the precepts of his great uncle, Sabmon, preserved him from any grave errors or lapses. Thus it was that he served as a cupbearer at Bacchanalian revels, but remained abstemious throughout, pouring night after night in the ruby-crusted cup of Famago the maddening wines that were drugged with cannabis and the stupefying arak with its infusion of poppy. With untainted heart and flesh, he beheld the infamous mummeries whereby the courtiers, vying with each other in shamelessness, attempted to lighten the king's ennui. Feeling only wonder or disgust, he watched the nimble and lascivious contortions of black dancers from Dusthom in the north, or saffron-bodied girls from the southern isles. His parents, who believed implicitly in the superhuman goodness of monarchs, had not prepared him for this spectacle of royal vice. But the reverence they had instilled so thoroughly into Amalzane led him to regard it all as being the peculiar but mysterious prerogative of the kings of Tasun. During his first month in Mirab, Amalzane heard much of the princess Ulua, sole daughter of Famago and Queen Lunlia. But since the women of the royal family seldom attended the banquets or appeared in public, he did not see her. The huge and shadowy palace, however, was filled with whispers concerning her amours. Ulua, he was told, had inherited the sorceries of her mother Lunlia, whose dark, luxurious beauty, so often sung by bewitched poets, was now fallen to a haggish decrepitude. The lovers of Ulua were innumerable, and she often procured their passions or ensured their fidelity by other charms than those of her person. Though little taller than a child, she was exquisitely formed and endowed with the loveliness of some female demon that might haunt the slumbers of youth. She was feared by many, and her ill will was deemed a dangerous thing. Famorga, no less blind to her sins and witcheries than he had been to those of Lunlia, indulged her in all ways and denied her nothing. Amalzane's duties left him much idle time, for Famorga usually slept the double sleep of age and intoxication after the evening revels. Much of this time he gave to the study of algebra and the reading of olden poems and romances. One morning, while he was engaged with certain algebraic calculations, there came to Amalzane a huge negress who had been pointed out to him as one of Ulua's waiting women. She told him peremptorily that he was to follow her to the apartments of Ulua. Bewildered and amazed by this singular interruption of his studies, he was unable to reply for a moment. Thereupon, seeing his hesitation, the great black woman lifted him in her naked arms and carried him easily from the room and through the palace halls. Angry and full of discomfiture, he found himself deposited in a chamber hung with shameless designs, where, amid the fuming of aphrodisiac vapors, the princess regarded him with luxurious gravity from a couch of fire-bright scarlet. She was small, as a woman of the elf folk, and voluptuous as a coiled lamia. The incense floated about her like sinuous veils. There are other things than the pouring of wine for a sottish monarch, or the study of worm-eaten volumes, said Ulula in a voice that was like the flowing of hot honey. Sir Cupbearer, your youth should have a better employment than these.
I ask no employment other than my duties and studies, replied Amalzane ungraciously.
But tell me, O princess, what is your will? Why has your serving woman brought me here in a fashion so unseemly?
For a youth so erudite and clever, the question should be needless, answered Ulula, smiling obliquely.
See you not that I am beautiful and desirable? Or can it be that your perceptions are duller than I thought?
I do not doubt that you are beautiful, said the boy. But such matters hardly concern a humble cupbearer.
The vapors, mounting thickly from golden thuribles before the couch, were parted with a motion as of drawn draperies, and Amalzane lowered his gaze before the enchantress, who shook with a soft laughter that made the jewels upon her bosom twinkle like living eyes.
It would seem that those musty volumes have indeed blinded you, she told him.
You have need of that euphrasy which purges the sight. Go now, but return presently, of your own accord. For many days thereafter, Amalzane, going about his duties as usual, was aware of a strange haunting. It seemed now that Ulula was everywhere, appearing at the revels as if by some new caprice. She flaunted her evil beauty in the eyes of the young cupbearer, and often by day he met her in the palace gardens and corridors. All men spoke of her as if conspiring tacitly to keep her in his thoughts, and it seemed that even the heavy arises whispered her name as they rustled in the lost winds that wandered through the gloomy and interminable halls. This, however, was not all, for her undesired image began to trouble his nightly dreams, and, awakening, he heard the warm, dulcet languor of her voice, and felt the caress of light and subtle fingers in the darkness. Peering at the pale moon that waxed beyond the windows above the black cypresses, he saw her dead, corroded face assume the living features of Ulula. The lithe and migniard form of the young witch appeared to move among the fabulous queens and goddesses that thronged the opulent hangings with their amours. Beheld as if through enchantment, her face leaned beside his in the mirrors, and she came and vanished, phantom-like, with seductive murmurs and wanton gestures, as he bent over his books. But though he was perturbed by these appearances, in which he could scarcely distinguish the real from the illusionary, Amalzane was still indifferent towards Ulua, being surely protected from her charms by the amulet containing the ashes of Yos Ebni, saint and sage and archimage. From certain curious flavors detected more than once in his food and drink, he suspected that the love potions, for which she had become infamous, were being administered to him, but beyond a light and passing qualmishness, he experienced no ill effect whatever, and he was wholly ignorant of the spells woven against him in secret, and the thrice-lethal involtuations that were designed to wound his heart and senses.